Jivan Mukta knows how he has become conditioned.
Therefore, he tries to purify himself by and return home back to Godhead. The eternally conditioned soul is eternally conditioned because he is controlled by the mind. The conditioned state and liberated state are compared to the sleeping, unconscious state and the awakened state. Those who are sleeping and unconscious are eternally conditioned, but those who are awake understand that they are eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, even in this material world, they engage in Krishna's service. As conferred by Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, Iha Yāse Harer Dāsya. If one takes to Krishna's service, he is liberated, even though he appears to be a conditioned soul within the material world. Jīvan Mukta Saucchate. In any condition, one is to be considered liberated if his only business is to serve Krishna. Kshetragyayita manaso vibhuti jivase mayar chitasya nityaha avirhita kvapiti rohitascha shudho vichashtehya vashuddha kartu. The individual soul bereft of Krishna consciousness has many ideas and activities created in the mind by the external energy. They have been existing from time immemorial. Sometimes they are manifest in the awakening state and in a dream state, but during deep sleep, unconsciousness or trance, they disappear. A person who is liberated in this life, Jivan Mukta, can see all these things vividly. Om Gyana Timirandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Minatas Maishri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Mangat Yamat Kripata Mahamande Shri Guru Dinatarinam. So, Srila Prabhupada explains that in this verse, the Kshetra Gya, the knower of the field, literally, or the soul within the body, refers to the Jiva, the individual conscious particle. And then in the next verse there is also Kshetragya, where he is the Purusha, Narayan Bhagavan Vasudeva. He is the supreme knower of the field. He knows all bodies. And this is also the same in Bhagavad Gita. There are two references to Kshetragya. One is about the individual soul, one is the supreme soul. So here in this verse, the point is that the small individual soul, when conditioned within the material body, is kept busy by the material energy through the functions of the mind. So the material modes, the three qualities of the material nature, sattva, rajas and tamas, constantly influence our mind and create different activities, different desires. And desires are the limbs, as it said in one part of Mahabharata, where Krishna gives instruction to Yudhishthira Maharaj. The mind's limbs are the desires. So we have unlimited desires in our material mind, created by the modes, the interaction of the modes of material nature. And this is what keeps us here in this material world. That's why Prabhupada explains that the reason for us being conditioned here is that we are unconscious of our spiritual nature, and we are engaged in material activities, in something which is not, in Maya. Something which is not means our eternal nature is a spiritual, unchanging, blissful and knowledgeable. But when we identify with this body and the mind, then it reverses, becomes the opposite. So this is the goal of all yoga practices, is on the first place to control the mind. Therefore, the Jivan Mukta, who is understanding the position of of the conditioned soul understands that unless one is free from the mind's control, one cannot be liberated. So this is the ultimate goal of yoga, and this is the beginning of the sutras in Patanjali's system also. That's how he defines yoga. Yoga means that process by which the chitta vrittis, the fluctuation of the mind, these different here they are called vibhu, different vibhuti, different activities, is to be subdued. They have to be conquered or controlled. So that's also what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, that one has to control the mind in the first place, and while one is under the control of the mind, and the mind is the enemy of the living entity, and one is in control of the mind, and the mind becomes a friend because it becomes a vehicle through which the soul attains liberation, because the mind is actually a subtle yes, subtle, just like this body is a gross machine. The body is just a subtle part of it, and sometimes we see, like Raghunath Das Goswami has this work called Manasa Shiksha. He's addressing his mind. You know, we see acharyas, they talk to their minds. You know, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur also prays, "Oh, dear mind," as if the mind, you know, it's a personification of something. The mind is not a person. It's, although we address it, "Oh, my dear mind, please give me a break. I just want to be peaceful." But the mind itself is not a person. It's just a dead matter, just like anything else just like this table, you know, it's a very subtle, and it stores unlimited information from our nitya bhava, our existence here since time immemorial, all the impressions we have, all the samskaras there in the mind. So even if you take to the path of yoga, then we are faced with this insurmountable problem of subduing this subtle energy which constantly produces by the contact with the influence of the material modes of nature these types of desires, which are born, you know, again from the contact of the external senses with their objects, but also from within, from the distorted memories. So even if sometimes we may see that we have conquered the mind and we are very peaceful, and sometimes the mind, Prabhupada compares it with a lake, and then, you know, the lake sometimes looks tranquil, and we feel peaceful, and it seems we're in charge. But Prabhupada says suddenly there is a bulb coming boom, on the surface because of the. What's going on beneath? There's things, some processes. There's some rotten. Something there. There is one lake in America which is actually a good example of that. That there are these different types of gases which come at different moments because of some old bones or whatever it is they are down. Decaying at the bottom. So suddenly we have this desire appear in our mind, and we wonder what happened, you know, how is this possible? But of course nowadays people even don't understand the point of and the need of controlling the mind and controlling the desires. They think, well, yoga means yes, control the mind, but in order to enjoy your senses, means take to the process of yoga, do some stretching or meditation, and then you will become peaceful, and then you can really enjoy. And thank you very much. I forget always. And So then, this is it's such a contradiction actually, because this is exactly the opposite what yoga is meant for. If one thinks that by yoga one will become more capable of enjoyment, it means that's such a defeat. You know, it's such a trick of the material energy. And in fact, you know, in this section I mentioned about the mind called the desires called the limbs of the mind, where Krishna talks to Yudhishthira Maharaj. He quotes ancient discussion from ancient sages who are talking about the control of the mind, and that section or that song of those sages called Kama Gita. It's an interesting, it's not so long, but there, you know, Krishna explains that you know, people who are taking to different processes, spiritual practices, without knowing the purpose of subduing the desires, they become cheated by these processes. So that's what the Kama Gita is. It's described there how, you know, it's at one point Kama starts talking. That's the personification of desire. And Kama says, you know, all those who don't know the purpose behind their practices, they think by asceticism, by following religious rituals, by prayers, by so many other different activities one can do, even they are so-called spiritual. You know, Kama explains how one becomes, he becomes, the Kamadev becomes just like when one thinks, well, I will control the mind by performing penances. Kama becomes his ego or her ego. And just like that, for each and every practice, Kama says, I become this, I become this. It becomes actually identified with the practice itself. So we lose the point. And that is even if one, like I mentioned, people nowadays, they don't even understand the goal, that the goal of yoga is to control the mind. And even if one understands, it's actually to control the mind so that we are liberated from material conditioning and go beyond this material existence. And mostly people understand that there is some non-dual existence beyond that, which is much, much more blissful than this this material existence. But beyond that, even that's very difficult to understand, that that beyond the non-dual substance of Brahman, there is a person who is the source of everything. And we are part of that person, we are meant to serve that person. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it's so difficult that he is understood as Vasudeva, as Krishna, as a person. But one, if one goes directly, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that's the ultimate point of yoga, to remember always him and to be absorbed in him, then the process becomes easy, because we take the reverse part. We just don't try to oppress the mind by external means, like beginning with like the standard Ashtanga yoga practice, Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai, starts from outside to inside. And first one, of course, controls the most the gross, from the gross part to the subtle part. You know, first one has to control the senses, the body. Even before that, one has to control the activities of the body. Means yama niyama, hence to follow some moral principles and some in behavior of non-violence, being clean, being regulated, and things like that. Then one has to control the body, the senses themselves, by practicing different bodily exercises. And after that, one has to control the mind through the prana, because the mind is moving within the body through the prana. So by controlling the prana, which is described in, even in Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila there talks about this type of yoga, and he's describing how one should control the mind by the prana. But then when the mind becomes controlled, means there is no yoga chitta nivritti, there is no fluctuations. Where is the mind then? Where is it focused? There should be a focus. So this focus, like Lord Kapila explains, is the Supreme Atman, and that is to be found in our heart. And he gives a very, very vivid description of that person within the heart, how he looks like. So when the yogi starts to focus the mind, there is a very clear description what one is expected to see. His basically bodily features, transcendental features, his color of body, his color of the eyes, the color of his lips, the jewels he's wearing, the earrings, and all this is described there. So this is the focus, and when the mind becomes completely absorbed in that form, that is the ultimate stage of yoga. That is samadhi. And then there is no more this type of material activities created in the mind by the material energy, because the mind is absorbed. But this is from outside to inside. And in the Bhakti Yoga, we start directly engaging everything. Therefore, Prabhupada quotes that verse from Rupa Goswami, Iha dasya, iha yasya, hare dasya, karmana manasagira. If we engage our activity of the senses, the body, karma, manasagira, and then our mind will follow, and our intelligence and our words. So this is the practice of Bhakti Yoga. We directly take to engaging everything in Krishna's service, and then we cure the root of the disease, because our material desires are born from the wrong identification, from the false ego, which dictates us constantly we are the controller and we are the enjoyer. This is the real problem, our false identification. So no matter what kind of process we follow, if there is some elements of this root desire remaining, that I am controller or enjoyer, then we will remain here. We cannot be liberated. But once we shift this perspective, then we become Jivan Mukta. Therefore, a devotee of the Lord, who completely, as Prabhupada describes, there is no other business than serving Krishna, is considered liberated. And this is by practice. One may say, well, I'm doing devotional service, but still my mind is not controlled. My mind is wild sometimes, for example. But that's not Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that apichet sudurachiro. So one can even perform, not only in the mind but even with gross can perform activities which are not approved by the shastras, or even abominable activities, but still if he is constantly engaged in the service, he is to be considered sadhu or saintly or liberated. So that's the main point. We have to, no matter whether we are in control of the fluctuations of the mind or not, if we engage in the service of Krishna, then that will follow automatically at one point or other in time. So our business first is not to attain peace in the mind, and then we have absolute control, and then we start serving. I know this is wrong, because it's an illusion then we can attain this state. There will be always some disturbance. And that's the example of the scriptures. In so many places we see very, very exalted sages who have attained the very high levels of spiritual emancipation, and they can control their minds completely, and their bodies and their senses through the mystical process, and they can even live underwater or whatever, or breathe once in a or don't eat and things like that. But, you know, then we see many examples with some agitation through created by the external energy, all this is suddenly shifted and then they lose control. But the devotee, you know, even if one loses control, if the devotee remains fixed in the service of Krishna, then one is protected, Krishna takes care. And eventually, you know, whether we control the mind or not, at the end, if we are doing, at the end means at the end of our life, when we leave that body, again, the state of mind at that time is the most important part of our life. It will depend on what we have done in our life. So we have, if we had served throughout our life Krishna all the time, then naturally our mind will be focused on Krishna, even if it hasn't been completely controlled throughout our life. But through the practice of serving Krishna, that will become automatic. Well, Krishna will be so pleased that he will appear in that moment in the mind. And then that means the final liberation. And of course, serving means engaging the mind. Again, there is this element of control. We have to make endeavor to engage the mind as long with the body, because the most important services are Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, which are all connected with the mind, right? Hearing, chanting, remembering. These activities are directly connected to the mind. So we have to put the mind in that situation, and that is possible by the higher, I mean, the mind energy. That higher energy is the intelligence. Intelligence should tell us, yes, you know, I should be doing this, you know, like Prabhupada uses this word, molding our life in a certain way so that we're engaged in service. So, you know, we decide, instead of doing this or that, I should put myself in a situation where I can hear of Krishna, Shravanam, where I can chant, where I can think of him, remember. So when we make these choices, you know, we force the mind, you know, to be engaged in service. And that's up to the stage when actually the mind becomes purified. And just like Lord Chaitanya explains, Chetvadarpana Marjanam, it's now covered. Its mind is like the mirror. We don't see who we are. We see just a black screen. But when we clean it, then we see our own self. We see us as first of all, in general, as eternal servant of Krishna, and gradually we become awakened and see exactly what kind of servant we are, and we become attracted to Krishna, one particular form of Krishna, and to a particular service of Krishna, and then the mind starts to desire. So if in the beginning, you know, we start with the practice, but our mind drags behind, you know, we are engaging the body by sitting here and listening about Krishna, but still, you know, we find ourselves trying to catch the mind, or sitting and chanting japa, but still the mind is running away, and then it's difficult, you know, we are just trying, you know, sometimes you see devotees when they chant, it's like a real struggle, you know, like they're fighting with something, trying to bring back their thoughts to the holy name. But when the mind becomes purified, it means the mind is attracted to Krishna, then it's more than anything else. So we don't need to actually force, we don't need to make anything. The mind starts automatically and actually becomes so much attracted to Krishna, so eager that we can't even catch up with that, the body. But to come to that state, we need to just follow the standard practice of bhakti yoga and sadhana bhakti and gradually become purified. Hare Krishna, thank you for your attention. Is there any question? Yes, Mother. So the question is, if we hear that the spiritual world is full of bliss and we desire to attain that bliss, but this is a selfish desire, shall we keep that or try to get rid of that desire? Well, in the beginning, this is a good desire because it's a desire that will help us to follow the practice of Bhakti Yoga. By itself, it's not a pure devotional service. It's a Mishra Bhakti, because there are egoistic elements, right? That's why you're doubting it. But, you know, we shouldn't jump immediately to pretending that I have no desires, or even think, no, this is bad desire. Once Burijan Prabhu asks Srila Prabhupada, he was kind of glorifying Prabhupada and addressing him, Srila Prabhupada, I just want to serve you life after life. I don't want even to go back to the spiritual world. Desiring this. And Prabhupada said, he just cut him in, don't make me come back for you. And we see Prabhupada encourage this desire that we want to get rid of this place. This place is not for gentlemen or ladies. This is not our natural position. So initially this is a good thing to desire. We should go back to Krishna. But the more we understand, the more we advance, we realize that the whole point of going there is to be connected with Krishna in love, in service. And then we understand that this love and service is not constrained by any atmosphere, whether it's material or spiritual. In other words, the pure devotee sees the material atmosphere as spiritual. It is actually spiritual. It's only one energy. So when one engages that energy in Krishna's service, it's just that it's not eternal, but it's spiritual. It's like gross art type. It's like we're doing art, you know, we're using this brass. And we have to polish it regularly, right? So this brass arati is there also in the spiritual world, and it's the same arati there. It just doesn't decay. You don't need to polish it. It's always eternally shining. Here we have to do it, and eventually maybe it will just whatever it will happen. But you know that's the time. That's that type of energy. But when we use that metal in Krishna's service, that's spiritual. So the same thing with our body. We use it. Then we realize that if no matter where I am, whether in material atmosphere or spiritual atmosphere, I'm connected in loving service with the Lord, it doesn't matter really. So then this desire becomes pale. It's kind of unimportant. The real desire is, how can I make Krishna happy? You know, how can I please him by some, like Prabhupada said, just some small service. So it doesn't really matter where we are. And that's why we see Lord Chaitanya praise like that. And I just want to be your servant life after life. And the other pure devotees. But, you know, don't worry about having such a desire. It's a bona fide desire. But still have the understanding of what is the pure goal, the goal of pure bhakti. It's not liberation. That's why Lord Kapiladev says there are five types of liberation, and one is impersonal. That's detestable for the bhakta. It's just the most horrible thing. Is a devotee prefers to go and rot in hell, you know. But remember Krishna and thus serve him instead of losing individuality and merging in his body or his bodily effulgence. But there are other four types: attaining his abode, attaining his same type of body, his same riches, same opulence, things like that. It's not interesting. Lord Kapiladev says, my devotees, they are not interested in that, my pure devotees. They're not interested in that. So ultimately this is pure bhakti. This is ananya bhakti or kevala bhakti. There's only one thing. It's Krishna, and his pleasure is in the first place. I'm behind. But first I'm suffering. I want to get rid of that. I want to you know, go to a place where there's no suffering. So that's fine. And then when we come closer to that place and to Krishna, then we realize, oh, he's so wonderful, you know, and we forget about ourselves. Okay. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. Ramananda. Yeah, the point was that Bhakti Yoga is very practical, and we just have to sit and listen to the Holy Name, and it's so nice. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. That's a good point. It's up to Krishna, actually, whether we go back or not. You know, that was the whole point. You know, it's Krishna's desire in the first place. So if he wants us there, yes. If he wants us here, yes. Kind of trance. Oh, okay. Well, here I think it refers to the yogic trance. So ultimately means absorption, complete absorption. It could be impersonal absorption also, but that's also liberation. But you can't stay if it's impersonal in that, and you can't stay in the unconscious state. You can try to be in deep sleep forever, but you can't. You can try, you will wake up. You can try artificially by some seductive, you know, substances, whatever. You can go in trance by that means also, like chemicals. You wake up again. It's just the nature. Even if you die, which is a long sleep, a deep sleep, again you wake up. It's just the nature of the soul to be awake. So then the yogic trance is like this samadhi absorption. Is you are unconscious of yourself, so there's no fluctuation. but that for that trance, you have to you have to reach a very high level of mind control in the first place. So you know you can't say, well, I'll control it by falling into trance. But to get to that point, to go into trance, you have to already be in perfect control. So again, you come back to, okay, what's the real practical steps? You know, okay, here it is. You know, you see this is so many processes. And then you have to pick up one. You can try different ones, but, you know, and by experience learn what is the most easy. But you can also learn by intelligence, by hearing what the Shastra's advice, especially in this age, like, it's so emphatic in this verse, Harir Namak. Namaha Kevalam. There is no other way in this age, and there is Harir Nam, then there is the Holy Name. And not only that, it's just not that you use it for controlling the mind, but you use it for connecting to Krishna in love. So So that's the beauty, you know, you accomplish both things. But in any case, we are not really concerned about that part, the mechanical, technical part of solving the problem with the mind. We are concerned about, you know, using the mind and using whatever we have, you know, and Krishna's service, you know, to love Krishna by, you know, offering that to Krishna, offering whatever we have. So that's the main point. And if, you know, in this life, the result of that will be control of the mind, fine. If not, you know, that's taken care of anyways. Like Hanumat Prachik Swami was giving this example. It's like this the tree, it's like our body is like a tree, and then, you know, the gross part, the senses are outside the branches, the leaves, so the other types of mechanical yoga processes, you start from outside, you know, you control, as I explained. So that means you take care really outside, you prune the tree nicely, it looks perfect, you know. But if you don't take care of the root, it means you still have desire for control and enjoy. Then the death comes and washes away the tree, which means your gross body goes away, but your subtle remains because you have still this very subtle desire. So again, a nice tree will come because you've practiced yoga, it will be a very nice tree, but it will be a tree, a tree, you have a material body. But if you, the bhakti yoga doesn't, you know, you don't really so much care about, you know, you may have some, you know, still not some imperfections in character or in mind control, whatever, you know. Outside the tree may look somehow imperfect, but then you cut the root, you cut the real desires, because you transform the desires, you redirect them. That was the point of Kama Gita. The point was not to try to oppress by some means, because you will be cheated by the desires themselves, taking the form of the means of what you're trying to do, but to redirect them. And when you redirect them to Krishna, then you're cutting the root. And when that comes, you know, it just washes away the tree. It was imperfect, maybe, but then there is no more tree coming back, no sprouts, no more material life, no more material body, because there is no root, nothing to keep it inside. You are attached already to Krishna. So that's worth taking care. It's a big topic. I don't think we have time to discuss, but it's not contradictory, because Prabhupada explains in the purport itself. He says that Nitya Bhad, or the Jivan Mukta, knows why he's here, why he became conditioned. So that means he was, and then he applies that means to go back to Godhead. So that means he wasn't conditioned at one point, right? If he knew why he is conditioned now, it means he wasn't conditioned eternally. Although the term means eternally, but Nitya Bhada. But what it is, that it's like there is no, we can't trace back the beginning of it, because the beginning of it goes beyond time. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains. So we are conditioned here, and the material world is cyclical, so we cannot say at one point in time we started being conditioned, and before we were not conditioned. If we're conditioned, it's been going on. You know, that's why it's called Nitya Bhada. But that's not what our constitutional position is. That's why, I mean, Nitya Siddhas means they've never been conditioned. That's why they say they're always in the spiritual world, they've never been conditioned. And those who are Nitya Bharas means they've been here for a long time, and you cannot trace back the beginning of it. But it doesn't mean that they're, you know, that's their constitutional position, that they're eternally, they're created. I mean, they are not created because we're eternal. There is no point of creation. We've been always there. And it's not that some jivas always have been free and some always have been bound. You know, there are some who is only free and never been conditioned, but there are others who who became conditioned. And that's Prabhupada's point. They, when they become jivanmukta, they become liberated, they know why they became conditioned. And in Gita and purport, Prabhupada says, that's not the point why we became conditioned. The point is that Krishna knows why we became conditioned. And the, also the point here is the next sentence is Prabhupada says, the eternally conditioned soul, okay, the jivanmukta knows how he became conditioned, therefore he tries to purify himself and return home, back to Godhead. So that the second part of the sentence is more important. That knowledge leads to acts of purification. So that in the whole issue of discussing, you know, philosophically the original, you know, state of the Nitya Bharas is becoming pointless in light of that example. Once you know the reason, and the reason at least for us at the moment is the wrong desires, the mind being involved in material nature, being contaminated through forgetfulness of Krishna. So that needs to be solved. And when we focus on that, that's the real point. Actually, Bhaktivinoda says in one place that if we focus too much on the issue of why exactly, you know, we became conditioned or we are conditioned, then you fall down. You are fallen anyway, but it means you are staying in that frame of mind, in that consciousness. You're there. You're focused on that point, but instead of being focused on the real point, how to solve the problem. Okay, last. I mean, I don't mean by saying you lose mind control and you become crazy or do crazy things, but I mean that you may not be able to fix it in one point. Like, for example, doing service, you're chanting, you want to just hear, or you're reading, you just want to hear, or you're doing puja, you want to just see Krishna, remember him in love, and do things and be there, you know, because you may be doing puja, but you be somewhere else in your mind, you know, like thinking about what I'll eat for breakfast or whatever, you know, you may be thinking of different things. So you're not there, that means you're losing control. But that's not the real point. I mean, okay, it's not the best service offered, but still you should continue engaging in service, continue chanting and doing the puja and hearing. And then at one point, I mean, that's natural, you know, if everybody, I guess, have some experience with chanting, of course, but even with doing puja, you know, doing something, and first of all, you can't really figure out what's going on. You're doing it mechanically, your mind is wild somewhere else, but you're just still trying. But then at one point, you realize, well, that's a person before me, and then and even more, it's a wonderful person, and then it's becoming more natural than you're actually there. It's the same with the holy name. He's present, Krishna is present, so when you start chanting, you're there, you know, with someone personally. So you're much more there when you become conscious, you become more Krishna conscious. But the point, the whole point I was making is to go to that stage, you should continue practicing even if you are unsuccessful. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, like Arjuna, well, how can I control the mind? It's more difficult than the wind. Abhyasa, Krishna says, by again and doing it again and again, by practice. So you continue doing it, and then that means you purify the mind, and it will become attracted to itself. It won't become wild. I mean, it will become wild, but for Krishna, and you can't control it. Then it will just run to Krishna. You will be completely mad. That's the goal. That kind of madness. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāi, Śrī Rādhā Gopīnāth ki jāi.